Giulio Segantini, the founder of Underdog Sales. Previous to this, he went from delivery consultant all the way to sales director in 9 years within one recruitment agency. Since then, Giulio has been obsessed with helping recruiters fix one problem, cold calling. This episode is for you if you want to massively improve the results you're getting from your phone activity, which I know so many of you will want to. We cover everything in this episode on cold calling, the mindset you need to cultivate, how to plan for cold calling sprints, scripts, and what should your script consist of, nailing the pitch and leading with problems, objection handling, question strategies that will enable your prospects to open up, and finally, closing. Enjoy this week's episode. Giulio, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
So I personally reached out to you. I picked up the phone. I really continue to enjoy your content on LinkedIn. I'm like a huge learner of sales. It's something that I'm always trying to get better at. And I always respect people that are on a journey to help people get more out of their sales activity. Like, sales is hard. And yeah, I just have a lot of time for that. So I wanted to bring you on the podcast. As you all know, recruiters often struggle with business development. It's a really common area for people that they want to improve, want to get better at. So today, I'm really excited to sort of dig into specifically how everyone listening to this can get more out of their cold calling activity. So we're going to really get into the granular details here with everyone, which I'm really excited to do. But I guess just to give everyone some immediate context, and then you can add a bit more color to it if you may. But why I also wanted to get you on is that you spent nearly a decade in the recruitment industry before you went on this more recent journey. But you went on the classic recruitment journey of starting as like a delivery associate, and you climbed the ranks and got all the way to client services director over 9 years within one firm. So, you know, you've obviously probably yourself gone on a journey of being absolutely terrible at sales, new business, to becoming better at it. You've managed people, you've been a 360 recruiter, you've done European markets, you specialize in obviously your market, correct me if I'm wrong, was like the sort of medical space.
Pharmaceutical, specifically the pharma.
So, you know, you've got loads of recruitment context. And then do you want to let everyone know over the last sort of year or so what you now do? Because it isn't that you've now left the recruitment industry, but I know you help a lot of people within the recruitment industry. So give us some color on your business now, Underdog Sales.
Of course. Well, look, it's pretty simple. Like I was an underdog. I was a philosophy graduate that managed to actually have a decent career because of sales. So I thought to go help those underdogs. And I think the best way to help young salespeople this day is through cold calling. So my specific focus now is to helping the SDRs, AEs, recruiters, and founders, because let's not forget about founders, that need help with the cold calling. So that's really my calling, just to make a terrible pun.
And when you say help people cold calling, is it quite simply help people get more out of the amount of input that they're putting in, like get more wins from doing that activity of cold calling?
I'm very glad you put it that way, because I think everything can work in sales. All different types of sales techniques and frameworks work, but you want the highest percentage of returns on your efforts. If you do 1,000 calls a day, you will always book meetings, but you want to get as much as possible by the time you have available. So absolutely.
So the idea here, right, for recruiters listening, is what we want to happen by the end of this episode is that there are going to be things that people can take away that should result in them being able to book more meetings with potential clients that they could work with.
100%.
So the way that we're going to do this, which is slightly different, which I'm really quite excited for, is me and Giulio mapped out the sort of cold calling structure, or like all the different elements. Okay, so we're going to go through mindset. We're going to go through planning. Uh-huh. We're going to go through scripts, openers, the actual pitch itself, objection handling, question strategies, closing, booking the meeting, And then some other things that you can take away, like tools that Judo really likes or things you should think about. And overall, just how can we stand out when we're prospecting and doing BD? So my goal here, as you're listening to this, is I'm really going to try and act as if I'm a recruiter who wants to get better at this certain activity. And we're going to talk about things that Judo believes that can help me get more out of what I'm doing. You know, some of this might sound a bit of a coaching session, but I think that that might make this even more valuable for people listening. So Julia, why don't we start? Like, I couldn't agree more. Like, right at the top of our list, we have mindset. I mean, you know, mindset is important in all different facets of our life, but even more so when it comes to sales and cold calling, because as we know, and I know you have a number on your whiteboard, we will get rejected countless times. And that is difficult to take. No one likes to feel rejected. So talk to us about when you speak to people about mindset, where do we start here? How do I get more in the right frame of mind? What different reframes do you like to give people that helps them, you know, brush off the rejection? Like, where should we start on the mindset pillar here, which probably underpins a lot of the success in cold calling?
I think you really quite touched on it. You know, it's the accepting the rejection. And I think more importantly is, I would start with knowing your numbers. So depending on your level of skills, you basically book a meeting from one every, let's say, 8 calls. I think if you're really exceptionally good in a good market, etc., to maybe one every 50 calls if you're the average person, literally. So obviously this means that you gotta think that even if you are some of the best cold callers on the planet, you're still gonna get rejected more likely than not 9 times out of 10. The good cold callers still get rejected 19 times out of 20, right? Just because you're not always going to call at the right time, you're not going to call the right person, you're going to call someone in a bad mood, et cetera, et cetera. So getting into that mindset of this will happen and I need to power through these rejections in order to get to the good side is a bit like getting to the mindset that I'm going to have to sweat to build muscle or to lose fat. So that would be the level 1 or level 0 is accepting the fact that rejection is part of the game. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I'm going to go into, because what you've also said there is just actually helping yourself out by understanding how many reps it might take to get a success. That's like really helpful to know, right? If you're just calling and you're just getting rejected after rejected, and you have no idea of typically how long it takes before you might get a win. Yeah, you're not setting yourself up to win there. So I want to ask you about that. But I guess, why don't I ask you this? Like, when you work with people, when you speak to them, when you start sort of digging into like what they're struggling with, particularly around the mindset piece, what is it often that, you know, people struggle with? Because oftentimes it is, ultimately rejection, but, you know, I'm scared of picking up the phone. What if this happens? What if that happens? What is it that you think often sort of holds people back mentally?
The simplest way to put this is the lack of consistency, meaning that I think a lot of people, what they do is that they push themselves to do BD when they need to, because especially a lot of recruiters are 360, so they gotta deliver and do BD. And what happens is that when they get 2-3 clients, they just deliver, and stop doing business development. And it's a bit like going for a sprint a lot before the summer because you want a 6-pack, and then you eat like a pig the rest of the year, and then like you get back to March, it's like, oh my God, it's horrible. So I think that building that level of consistency that you're always prospecting, that takes so many of the problems away. So if you just get into the habit that it's a daily habit, then even if it's 30 minutes, you'll get rid of most of the problems around mindset, around cold reluctance, around fear as a whole.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I mean, I can relate with that myself. And as everyone will know and would have experienced, particularly if you're a 360 recruiter, it's very easy to find yourself at the end of the day going, oh, I haven't done any BD today because I was working on these jobs. So even in my own business, I'm the main person that does sales. When I haven't done the calling for a couple of days and then I go to do it, the nerves are more heightened for sure. And like that internal voice of like, what if this goes wrong, or the potential rejection just seems a lot more heavier when yesterday at the same time, I did it and it went fine. So I think that's absolutely a really good point. If you're building in that consistency daily, regardless of how long you're doing it for, a lot of the mindset pieces melts away.
Absolutely. I personally would say minimum 5 conversations a day. And if you're not calling into crazy markets, you're still going to get that done in like half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour max. And the one tip that I give everyone that's starting cold calling, maybe you're a delivery guy that's moving into 360, or you got to get back on the phone because you had to get rid of some people, etc., is to do it like in an incremental way. So a lot of people, what they do when they fail diets is they're like, okay, from tomorrow, I'm going to eat half the calories. And your body will go into literal shock. Exactly the same for the mind. If you push yourself to do like 4 hours of cold calling when you haven't done it in 2 months, your brain will literally go into panic. And there's a very good chance they'll be like, oh, no, I don't want to do this tomorrow. And you'll come up with all types of excuses. So also build that out as a habit and then let the momentum do its work.
Yeah, I really like that. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you listening have read the Atomic Habits book, and they talk about that, right? In terms of, they got that example of there of the person that built the habit of going to the gym. It was just about getting to the gym, even if that was for being in there for like a couple of minutes, or it was actually the process of being there, getting there. And, you know, the whole idea of, if you don't do the cold calling or you don't do the sales calls 2 days in a row, you're then building a new habit, which is not doing the cold calling. Right.
So yes.
Yeah, I really, really like that. So let's get into planning then, because I think when you spoke about one of the ways that you can help yourself mentally is actually understanding, typically, not always, but typically from the data that you have, how long it normally takes to get the outcome that you want, which is a booked meeting with a potential hiring manager in your particular niche. So look, Julia, if we're in a session right now and I say, look, I'm not measuring anything. I don't actually have a great idea of like how many calls it makes me. I haven't done loads of calling. What are the things that I need to start measuring that can help me understand it should normally take me 15 calls to get a meeting with a hiring manager? Like, what are the things that I should be measuring? What spreadsheet should I create? What are the columns? What should I be measuring?
I mean, look, if you can, I think it's 5 meters that I look at. I've got it written down as well myself, but it's obviously the pickup rate is the first one. Because let's say you work in a really tough market to get people to pick up the phone, then you're going to need more dials or a parallel dial or whatever. So the pickup rate will be the first one. I think in the UK, you typically look from 10 to 20%. The first dial will always have the highest pickup rate. So I would think about pickup rate is the first, because that will tell you how many dials for a conversation. Then how often do you fail at your opener? And as a general rule of thumb, 1 out of 5 is normal. So that means you're just catching someone in a meeting in a bad mood, etc. If it's more than 20%, typically either your opener or your tonality sack. That's the first thing to think about. Then I would say at least 1 out of 4 conversations should move into a, after your pitch, should move into a more in detail conversation. So that means that if that's not working, your pitch is wrong. And then at that point, what you really got to look at is how many are then converting to a meeting. But this would be the general rule of thumb. I think the last one I would add is the sat rate, because what typically happens is that a lot of salespeople try to push. So I tell salespeople, recruiters for me are salespeople. They typically push for meetings and then they get no-show. So if your no-show is over like 10-15%, there's a good chance you're pushing people into getting the meeting. So this would be some general numbers that you can keep in mind to have a benchmark average from my experience and statistics I've been looking at for quite a while.
Okay, so let's just recap that. So if I'm not measuring anything at all and I want to have a bit more of an understanding and a science behind what's working or how long it takes me to get the outcomes that I want, the first sort of column on my spreadsheet that I want to be measuring is basically number of calls. Second column will then
to
be...
to connect.
Yeah, so number of calls, and then the second column would be the amount of calls that get connected and someone picks up. So the pickup rate, as you said. So how many people do I actually get through to? So then you'll have a conversion there. I've done 10 calls and only 3 people have picked up, for example. Then what you're saying is, then what you want to measure is how many people let you go beyond your opener, essentially. So how many people go, yep, like, okay, I'm happy to give you 30 seconds, 45 seconds or whatever. So then we go from, like you called it, like failed openers, basically. So
where
people have gone, Julio, look, now just isn't a good time. I've heard that opener 50 times already, like, go away, take me off your list. So then we're measuring how many people let me get into like my pitch, essentially. So then you'll have a conversion there. Then what you're saying is, then am I measuring the amount of people that I then have like a conversation with? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I would say conversation for me is like over 2 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
2 minutes means you're starting to talk about some real stuff.
Yeah. So over 2 minutes.
Over 2 minutes for me is a conversation. Before that, you could just be handling objections in very often. If you book in a meeting in 2 minutes, either they're absolutely desperate or you're referred or they're not showing.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So yeah, I guess we might call that what, like successful conversations or like sales conversations or whatever.
Yeah.
And then second to final column would be meetings booked. And then the final column would be meetings booked that were held, that were attended.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, correct. Cool. And then the idea here, Julio, is if I build out this data in my spreadsheet, then I can have a way more clearer idea of like what I need to do to be successful with this channel, right? How many calls do I need to make 100%. To get to, and we make it a lot more scientific, a lot less emotional, a lot less guesswork.
Yes, absolutely. If you ignore the numbers, cold calling is a repeatable process. That's why people, like companies, spend millions to build out departments at times. It's just because it's a repeatable process. You do X, you get Y.
Yeah, okay, cool. We've spoken a lot on here, and I'm sure you did it in your career, but obviously there's also then the planning of like building your list and making sure it's the right ideal customer and these things. I think let's just assume, because I want to move on to the stuff that I'm sure people get even more value out of. Like, let's just assume that everyone listening to this understands their ideal client profile. If you don't, you really need to understand this. You know, you really need to understand the problems and issues that hiring managers that you're prospecting have, what challenges they're facing, what size companies they work in, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you really need to understand this, because if you don't understand the people you're calling and the issues they have and the things that you might be able to solve for them, like the rest of everything that we're going to talk about is going to be extremely difficult. Like, you're going to find it difficult to build scripts, these types of things. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, but that like, I want to sort of just caveat that let's assume that people know that. Is there anything else that you think goes into planning? Whilst we take a short break, I wanted to take a moment to chat to you about one of our amazing partners, Sourcewell, the industry-leading recruitment engagement platform. I'm a user myself, and I don't know what I would do without it. From building personalized messaging cadences across a variety of channels to automating follow-ups and data tracking straight back into my CRM. It's really made an impact in streamlining my workflow and, most importantly, accelerating my sales results. My favorite feature by far is the live feed. By being able to see in real time who's engaging with your campaigns, it enables me to prioritize my outreach with the most engaged prospects, which helps me get way more out of what I put in. So I'm gonna be honest, if you haven't got Sourcewell and you're a recruiter, I really believe you're at a disadvantage. To find out more and see the platform in action, make sure you click the link in the show notes and mention the Recruitment Mentors podcast. Because you listen to this podcast, you're going to be able to get access to an exclusive offer. Free 50 phone credits, 50 email credits, which is at the value of circa £500 per user. So make sure you mention the Recruitment Mentors podcast and click the link in the show notes.
There's one thing I would, on the list building, I would say never just knock on one door. So if there's a vacancy or you know this company's hiring, you want to call hiring manager, the department director, something that most people miss, as well as HR. Talent acquisition for me is always the last stage, unless it's a really big company.
Yeah, nice. That's a great point. So also don't fall into the trap of, yeah, just having one stakeholder on your prospecting list, if just hiring manager. Okay, cool. Love that. Cool. So let's say we understand all of that. Julio, I know who I'm calling. I'm just not getting the most out of my calls right now. I'm struggling. My conversion rates are low, but more specifically, like, I've got my list. I'm doing the dials, as you can see. I've shared with you my recent stats over the last 3 months, but I'm just not getting past the opening bit. Like, when I call people, they're always busy or they say like, go away, get me off my list. Like, where should I start here? I don't really have a script. I sort of have something in my head that I like to use, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Talk to me about where would you start with me? Should I write down my script? Where do we start with openers if that's something that I'm struggling with?
Sure. Well, look, I typically look at a given a range of options, at least three options. Because the most important thing we've called calling, as most people will tell you, other than mindset, is the tonality. If your words don't feel like yours, you will fail. It's just gonna happen. So the most important thing is that the opener's gotta feel something you're comfortable with. Which is why some people do permission-based, some people don't, whatever. I typically, let's say three main options I would use, maybe four. So the one, I'm gonna skim that over that because it's the most complicated, that it's the really personalized one. So that's when you start with a very specific trigger. So I'll call you up and say, hey, Shim, I've noticed you just joined company X and you guys are currently hiring for this position. Do you mind if we talk a little bit about that? And the more personalized, the more the person feels, okay, this is relevant, I'll give it a time. But that's not something I can template. So it'll depend from call to call. But that would be an example. Mm-hmm. The second one that I use, and this is the one that I probably recommend to recruiters the most, is the what I call the account-based marketing. And it's essentially a very non-aggressive opener. It works really well in recruitment because recruitment people get so many calls. So if you sound like a recruiter right away, people get the guard up immediately, right? And this is something typically like, you're not expecting my call, Hisham. I was wondering if you could help me. You're actually part of a group of 27 IT companies or software houses I would personally like to work with, but I don't know if it's relevant or what the process is. Can you help me? And this works quite well because you're asking for help twice, so it doesn't tend to trigger that instant, this is a sales because I wanna fight.
So let's go through that again. What are like the core interchangeable bits there? So you said, hey, Julio, you're not expecting my call. You're actually on the list of sort of companies that I would love to work with. Can you help me? I don't know what the process is on, you know, going about doing that. Can you help me do that? Like, just talk us through that again. What are like the core elements of that? Just quickly, because I think that'd be really helpful for people.
When the person picks up the phone, they're in fight or flight mode. They don't know your number. They don't know who you are. They don't know your voice. So you want to calm that subconscious mind. And this is why you immediately address that. You're not expecting my call. I was wondering if you could help me. This part immediately puts their mind at ease. It's like, okay, I want to be helpful. Most humans want to. And then you go with like, look, you're part of a list of 27. And then you put their niche in. So they know it's relevant. They know you're not some car sales or life insurance or whatever. So be like, look, you're part of 27, and the more detailed, the better. You're part of 27 maintenance managers in Swindon I would like to work with. So at this point, you tell them what this is about, but then you take a step back and say, look, I don't know what the process is or if it's relevant. Can you help me? And then you hit them again. Like this one, whenever I delivered it with agencies, they typically seen, with HR, it works like a dream. Like they've seen like 90% hit rate. And then if the tonality is good for this is probably for the more delicate recruiters. Like I don't use it because it doesn't go well with my personality. But like if you're a bit more, not a very salesy person, it works very well because it just removes that bar. So that would be the process. Am I making myself clear?
Yeah. No, I think that's really great. I think what I also really like about that is that, as you said, what you're also doing there is you're going to be sounding different. You're not sort of calling people saying, hey, like Julio, notice that you're hiring for this person. It's been live for however many weeks. These people have probably heard that time and time again, and they're going to be in that fight mode where it's like, no, like we have a process, like get off the phone. So that's the second one. Goes through the other two then.
Then there's a typical, this is a sales, okay? And I use that, it's one of my favorite. I have slight variation, which is something like, look, we don't know each other, so it is technically a cold call. I'm not sure if you want to throw the phone out the window or let me explain why it could be relevant. It's totally up to you. And this is just a variation on the pattern interrupt that Benjamin Deney made popular. It generally works well with the personality that's just wants to be confident about it. Look, it's a cold call. I'm not going to hide behind anything. Like, just let me have the time. I like this specifically because you get lower compliance rate. So less people will let you. But the ones that do know exactly what it is. With the first one, sometimes you're going to get people like a bit confused. Mm. And so like you will still get to pitch, but like it's not going to be as transparent. So that's another one that I recommend. And again, not that many recruiters use it. Because most recruiters start with like, hey, this is Julio Segantini from Underdog Sales. I'm calling you because we specialize in X, Y, and Z, blah, blah, blah. That's what everyone sounds like.
And what's the fourth one then, the final one?
So the fourth one is the purely humorous one and is the addressing the elephant in the room. This is actually what I used to use back in the day, which is something like, look, I'm going to be upfront, I'm a recruiter. I'm probably the 10th one that calls you today, right? And then at this point, it's so exaggerated that typically the person's like, well, it's not the 10th. Mm. If I promise to not sound like everyone else, though, will you let me have 30 seconds? And it's a bit more like that casual, I know I'm a recruiter. I know you get a lot of these calls. I'm going to own to that and I'm going to address that elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot. There's variations, like Benjamin says, like, you know, if I told you I'm a recruiter, would a piece of your soul die? That's probably a bit too extreme. I like something a little bit simpler in this case.
Okay, understood. Awesome. And then would you advise people then if they, because for me, I feel like you should have this written down and you should practice it and you shouldn't be thinking on your feet every time when you deliver this, because it's one less thing to think about, isn't it? Because all I want to be doing when I do this is really try and get better at the tonality, the way that I deliver it, rather than thinking of the words. So do you advise people that don't have scripts to have scripts? I'm very pro script. It's like you said, it's all about how you deliver the script and does it sound like it's your words. But the reason why I really like scripts is because it's a bit of a safety blanket. I'm not having to think on my feet. I'm gonna have to think on my feet. That's sales. Like when we get past this opening bit and I ask a question or whatever, I'm gonna have to think on my feet. That you really get better at that by doing the reps and navigating the conversation. But particularly this open part, I really don't feel like you should be thinking on your feet every time. So someone picks up and then you're just having to reel off how you open up calls. I think you're giving yourself a harder, you put yourself at disadvantage. So how do you feel about scripting this part?
Well, look, you literally said it, right? It's like you don't want to be thinking. And actually, I wouldn't just script this part. I script the pitch as well. And most of my objection and the responses I've done hundreds of times. The more you're fluent with it, the less you have to think and use brain power for this, and the more you can focus on what they're saying. And this is what most people get wrong at the beginning, is because they're so focused on what they're gonna say, they don't listen. And then they lose so much about what the call is about. So 100% scripting as much as possible. Think about it this way, when you go to the gym, you don't walk in the gym, oh, you know what, I'm just gonna start lifting some weights. You follow a bloody plan. Sometimes you watch YouTube videos, you got that, you practice the movement over and over. It's just a script feel, because it's a written word, you feel stupid about using that, but it's nonsense. Actors do it, they get paid millions. We can do it to get paid hundreds of thousands.
So, okay, cool. So look, Julia, you've convinced me. I need a script. Let's build out my script together. So I'll be honest, out of the different examples that you gave me, what I felt resonated with sort of me and how I like to deliver my words is the second one. I have actually had quite a lot of success in calling people and asking for their help, and they give me a good referral. So I feel like that's something that I could really bring to my BD game. Let's build this out then. So my market is startups and scale-ups, and I help them recruit the best go-to-market talent in Europe. Typically, I focus on startup and scale-ups in the UK. And more specifically, I work with startups and scale-ups in the ed tech space. I'm really passionate about education, training and development. So my niche is typically account executives or even SDRs, but normally they're in their sort of second phase of their career. So they've done the job for a little while and they're looking to progress to senior SDR. They're not quite an account executive yet. Or account executives, or then SDR managers, or account executive managers, or sort of heads of sales. That's typically the types of roles that I do. It's all permanent. Help me build out this script then, with having the approach of targeting specific ed tech companies that are on my dream client list that I'd love to be working for. I've heard from a number of people that I've placed that they've worked there in the past and they thought it was a great business, which is why I've got them on my list. What might my opener sound like?
Well, actually, look, something I've been testing with recently is actually, if you're going for such a very targeted list, I actually use a variation, which is like, look, Hisham, we don't know each other. The reason I'm calling is because I did a little bit of research and you look like a dream prospect for me. Do you mind if I explain why it could be relevant for you as well?
Nice. I like that. I like the sound of that.
It's simple. Also, like, it tickles the ego, right? Dream prospect. Most of the time, they'll be like, you know what? Like, yeah, let's talk about this. So if you've got a really clear target list, I find this works like a dream.
Yeah. And look, not a lot of people listening to this will likely operate in sort of niche verticals. It might not be as niche as I just said, but there will be niche. And we've spoken a lot about in this podcast about the importance of market mapping, really understanding what your dream client looks like. Let's roll that out and sort of build this out then. So I've got a dream client list. There's 50 companies on this list that I know if I start working with them, I'd be really confident that I can provide some really good quality talent with them, because I've done it with maybe 15, 20% of this 50 so far. So I've got a bit of a track record. I've made some placements and I really want to build my market in this ed tech space. That's what I want to be known for. So yeah, Julio, I really like the idea of that. So my opener then is going to sound a bit like, hey, Julio, we haven't actually spoken before, but being upfront and honest, I've actually got you on a dream prospect list. Do you mind if I explain in 30 seconds why you're on my dream prospect list?
And this is good because you made it yours. Mm. This is the important part. It's got to sound like you. So all those that are listening, don't just copy paste it. Try it out loud until you find your own way, because that's the important part of it.
Yeah, I really like that. That sort of goes with my style. So if I, what am I expected to run into then, Julia? So I've done my opener and some people I'm assuming are going to go, no, like, what you're on about, you're lying, or get me off your list. But if people then go, sure, like, happy for you to explain, happy to give you 30 seconds to explain why we're a dream client, what might my pitch sound like? What do I have to get crafted here?
We'll get back to the episode in just 1 minute, but today I'm excited to talk to you about one of our partners, Firefish, the recruitment CRM that accelerates data-driven growth. The problem with most recruitment CRMs is that they are just a database of records, meaning they become just one of the many tools that recruiters use every day. Like with all systems, the records are only as good as the data being captured. Our sponsors, Firefish, know that for agencies to win faster, data needs to be at the heart of their business, making your CRM the single source of truth. With over 10,000 records created and updated every day and 85% of placements from existing candidates, Firefish enables recruiters to enrich and engage their data, equipping you with real-time insights needed to win faster. To learn more about Firefish and take advantage of an exclusive Recruitment Mentors podcast offer, make sure you click the link in the show notes and mention the Recruitment Mentors podcast when speaking to the Firefish team.
The simplest distinction that I always find agencies haven't figured out for some reason, which is quite clearly in the SaaS space, is that crap salespeople will talk about features. Decent salespeople will talk about benefits. Great salespeople will talk about problems. So instead of starting with something like, you know, the feature would be like, oh, I've got a list of 150 account executives you could talk to, right? Which sounds far-fetched. It's irrelevant. To the prospect, it's not that relevant. And it's just going to get them a bit like, okay, this sounds like everyone else. The benefit would be, you know, something like, you know, I could get you to interview someone tomorrow, blah, blah. So you can drill deeper, but again, you're triggering the prospect resistance, because that's what most agencies are going to tell them. So the focus would be, what is the problem that these people are facing that you can actually fix? And this, the more you know your market, the more different this will look. So for example, someone in the ed tech space, I roughly know a little bit what that might look like, right? It could be that they keep getting, well, you know, one of the problems you might be facing, so I talked to founders of the ed tech space, and one of the problems they face is that they keep getting HR tech salespeople instead of ed tech, and most recruiters think they're the same. And that could be a problem that they might be facing that hits them quite a lot, because it's just different, and they're not going to have the same type of skill set. And that's so specific to them, they don't know, okay, this person knows what they're talking about, right? And then drafting problems as specific and as visceral. So they gotta feel like the problem that they're sitting there at night when they're eating dinner with their wife, and that's actually what they're thinking about. And if you can hit two or three of those problems, you're typically gonna get some of them like, okay, go on. And that's what you want them to be.
So let's build this out a bit, but maybe let's just make it a bit more general from what you've seen.
General, sorry.
No, it's fine. That's good. So let's just, you know, play this out and think about some of the common things that you've helped your recruiters build out. So things that, just from what I know, you know, I might end up leading with benefits around, you know, the amount of time it's taking these busy hiring managers, because I normally sort of prospect directly to hiring managers. The amount of time that these hiring managers are losing to going through unrelevant CVs or even not that good quality interviews, which is then resulting in these people finding it really difficult to hit their target or having less time to do high leverage tasks. So the time maybe that's being spent going through unqualified and not very good quality candidates is something that I might draw on. I might also draw on something like you said, in terms of, I'm finding that a lot of hiring managers I speak to, like you, are finding themselves sitting across the table from someone that hasn't got the educational background or experience that I know a lot of founders need and require because of your industry. Uh-huh. There might be some uh-huh. issues there. So again, like qualification on the right type of candidates. Or I might even say something around the, I'm speaking to a lot of founders who are actually getting a good number of interviews. However, they're really struggling to successfully close and hire people and getting them over the line. Is maybe another mm-hmm. benefit that I might
say that
they're interviewing people, but actually they want to offer people, but they're struggling to actually get them over the line and these people, and they're missing out talent to their competitors maybe is something that, because they're startups and scale ups, that might be another thing that I might highlight.
Yeah, so look, you highlighted three really good problems. The only tip I would give to especially the niche recruiters is to go even more specific. Obviously, you wanted to give a general example, but when you go into the industry examples, so you're recruiting engineers and like, oh, for example, HR is passing you CVs that should be engineers, but actually they've just been to a technical college, right? Or things that are really specific. And that's when they go like, yeah. And you hear, they're like, yeah, the emotions creeps up in the voice. And that's when you know you're running a good cold call, because you're getting the person emotional. And problems will do that far more than any benefit you can bring up.
Yeah, nice. So what might this sound like then? So I've said that they're on my dream client list. They've given me 30 seconds. Uh-huh. What does this sort of pitch sound like then? How should we construct it? What should it be constructed like?
So I'll be like, look, typically when I'm talking to founders of ad tech companies, let's give that an example, that they struggle with one or three things. And that's when you're going to be like, for example, that they're losing a lot of time because it takes probably hours to go through 100 CVs to find one good Prince Charming to take to the interview stage. Or perhaps it's not that, but they're finding that they do get 3-4 interviews, but then when it actually comes to closing, they keep having offers rejected or counter offers happening or ridiculous salary expectations, right? Or finally, it's neither of those, and then you can either move a third one. I personally prefer two problems, as long as they're really well crafted, because otherwise you start to lose their attention a little bit.
Yeah.
But two to three problems is the idea. If you're doing something incredibly niche, you could try and go for one, but generally 2-3 problems is the recommended.
And then how do I close it out? Do I close it in a sort of no-based way? What's the next part to that?
Yes. I can tell you're a very, very good salesperson. So at this point, you obviously go, you want to go with the negative because this is what your brain is fight towards. You're generally skeptical. So if I say, do any of this problem resonate with you? For the last 100 years, we've been trained to get people to say yes. So people are very skeptical of it. So this is the point where like, well, look, but you might tell me, and then you go all the other way. You might tell me that whenever you're hiring, you get 5 interviews, they're all perfect candidates, and you ended up making 2 offers, so you even have a backup candidate. And you make it, you know, almost a bit ridiculous, because then typically you get a chuckle. Like, well, you know, I'm not going to say that. Okay, you're not going to say that. So look, if you had to pick one of the 3 problems, which one would stand out the most?
Okay, right.
So this is the problem based.
Yeah, let's play this out then. Okay, cool. So mm-hmm. I've done my opener. I've been like, hey, Giulio, look, I'll be up front. We haven't spoken before. However, you're actually on a list of 50 ed tech businesses in the UK that... Uh-huh. I'd love to work with. You have to give me 30 seconds explaining exactly why you're on my dream client list.
Sure, go on.
Sure, appreciate that. So look, Giulio, I often find myself speaking to busy VPs of sales in edtech businesses who are running into one of two problems. One, they're spending hours going through CVs that are often irrelevant and result in booking 1 or 2 interviews that often aren't great quality. Or two, they're getting interviews and you're booking in interviews. However, you're getting to the offer stage and you're not doing great at actually closing these people, and you're losing out to great talent to your competitors. Now, Giulio, I probably assume this is where you tell me that you don't have any of these issues. You've got fantastic salespeople in the team. You never have an issue hiring salespeople. Is that the case here?
Well, of course, I'm not going to say that. But how is it that you could possibly help?
Sure, that's a great question. I guess if we was to sort of look at one of those two issues, the, you know, not having, spending loads of time going through all the CVs that are often not great quality, or two, you're getting good people to offer stage, but you're not closing them. Which one of those issues stood out the most to you?
Well, I guess it's probably the former. We do get a lot of applicants. And what tends to happen is that we really have to spend, like, we're a small business, we don't have an HR that can do it for us. And even if they did, would they be able to figure out which ones are the good CVs? So we really spend quite a lot of time doing that, finding the unicorn in the crowd, let's say.
And when you say spend a lot of time, like, what are we talking here, Julio? Like, what, how much time?
I would say I'd probably spend at least I would say whenever we open a position, it probably takes like at least 2-3 hours to arrange an interview.
Two, three hours
of sifting through CVs to just figure out the right person. And that doesn't include the interviewing time.
Mm. And I'm assuming, like, you've got targets to hit, right? As I said, you're a VP of sales. So, like, what does that have a knock-on effect on? Is it that you're having less time to speak to your dream clients and get in front of people that you love to be working with? Like, what is that resulting in?
Well, it's resulting, first of all, a lot of frustration. Because I should be doing all the things. But then at the same time, if I don't do this, I won't have time for those other things. So it's literally a dog biting his tail. And it's just taking a knock-on effect on sales. And then I need to work weekends in order to catch up, probably.
Mm. Look, I guess, you know, the things that you shared with me, you're not the first to say it. Like, I've heard this quite a few times now when speaking to people like you. Now, I'm not going to say that I can completely solve all of those issues for you. But if I was to say that, you know, we could reduce the amount of time you're spending going through interviews, and you could spend more time actually in front of potential great salespeople that could help you achieve your target this year, would it be a bad idea to book in a meeting when I'm not calling you out of the blue where we can discuss this further?
I don't think it would be a bad idea, no. If you can help, I'd be keen to listen.
There we go. We just ended up doing a role play. I just sort of freestyled there, but
man, that was beautiful. That was, we need to break it down now, because that was so masterfully executed. Like, I loved it.
So obviously we were speaking about the pitch, right? So we've had our problems. They did it to us. Like, talk to us a bit about, you know, you didn't give me loads of like huge objections there, right? So
of course,
what are the common objections that you're helping people with? What am I probably going to run into when I'm not dealing with? Because I think oftentimes where people have a gripe with role plays is it's often the way that it's probably not going to be like in the real world, right? So what are the,
cool.
Just go through there, because we didn't really run into like any major objections there, but mm-hmm. What are the objections that you're often, you know, helping recruiters overcome? And then let's just sort of unpick how you typically approach objections and navigating those.
Just before we do that, one thing I want to mention about your roleplay, because it's crucial for the listeners, is what you've done there after the problem is that so many people will try to close right away. They got a problem, I'm going to close. Instead, you made the problem clear. So what does that mean? So you want an example of that problem. That's one of the most important things I've learned. Once you have an example, it triggers what is called the availability bias. If I can think of an example, it becomes real. So once you have the example, that's the minimum level to close. So without the example, you don't close.
Right,
so
that okay, was I love great, that. But, yeah, that's great. Yeah. So when they said spending loads of time, I then said, what do you mean? So like how much time is the example? I said, how much time?
Yeah, exactly. And then at that point, I'm thinking, because I might have not even thought about it. That's the thing, especially in recruitment, so often they haven't thought about how many hours they're wasting doing something. They could pay someone, okay, it might cost 20 grand. How much does their time cost?
Mm.
Almost always going to be a winner. So that's the point where they go, oh, it cost me this. And then you follow that up, which, okay, but what does that have a knock-on effect on? That was beautiful. I love that. So this is when I'm quantifying. Well, and I played it. I was like, well, actually, it's annoying. It's frustrating. And that's the emotions. If there's emotion, there's action. Mm. And that's what you want.
Yeah.
This is why, like, when you talk about numbers and things, you're having a very rational conversation. Rational conversations typically end in, can you send me an email?
Mm. Okay, got you. Yeah. So basically you're just highlighting the fact that rather than trying to get straight to the close when I say, yeah, that some of those problems do exist in my world, you try and dig into like, okay, tell me more about that. What, give me an example of that. What does it actually look like for you and your team? Like, get them talking about that. Cause then you can, like, obviously when we get to the end, I can then use that as the reason why it might be a good idea to have further time. If I'm saying that we might not be able to solve all those issues that you shared with me, you know, get more time back, et cetera, et cetera. But if we could, like, is it a bad idea to jump on? But that's going to be a lot more harder to do if you haven't got those real tangible examples.
100%, because it's, I haven't got emotional. I haven't had the time to become emotional. I don't have the quantity in my head that it's making spending my time with you worth it. And also it's not quantifiable in terms of like what I might get out of it. So that's why I loved it the way you've done it. And that's what people should be thinking about. You also could have run into me saying, oh, it takes me 10 minutes.
Mm.
Right. And then, you know, this probably not such a big problem. They're not going to pay 15 grand for that. If it takes him 10 minutes to go through the CVs, that's not a big problem. And they're not going to pay you. And you also want to know that before you get yourself committed or your hopes up on a client that might never close.
Oh yeah, that's a really good point as well to highlight, is that look, not everyone is going to have the issues that you highlight. And if they don't, then there isn't something there for you to diagnose, or there isn't, you know, there isn't going to be as much problems for you to solve, which is also what this helps with. You disqualify people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So why don't we, let's just play out two very common objections that I know everyone listening to this will run into. So let's just say, you know, I did my problem piece and you sort of said some of those do resonate. And then I said, okay, like out of those two, like which ones resonated most? And you said, well, I'll be honest with you, Hisham, I'm spending a lot of time going through CVs. However, we do handle recruitment internally. Like, I'm spending a lot of time on it, but we have someone internal that does it. Like, let's go through that one. We handle it internally. Let's go through that one first. How do we navigate objections?
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. As you know, I'm your host here, but I'm also the founder of Hector, an all-in-one training platform powered by current top performers. We're on a mission to help thousands of recruiters achieve their potential by providing world-class training delivered by today's top performers. If you're a growing recruitment business that wants an alternative way to upskill and develop your team that doesn't involve having to spend more time doing it yourself or putting the responsibility on your already time-poor billing managers, then you should check out Hector. After successfully implementing Hector in several recruitment companies, we've helped them reduce the time it takes for their consultants to do their first 360 deal, improve important performance metrics like job to fill ratios, and even increased the average billings per head by 20% for multiple recruitment teams. You can check out Hector and learn more about how we can help your business and book a call directly with me in the link in the show notes.
Okay, so before we jump into a specific example, what I used to do when I was a recruiter is I'm going to try and arm wrestle you. I'm going to be, well, that's okay because we work alongside your internal department, blah, blah. And what I'm doing, I'm really selling benefits. I'm sidestepping the objection. Instead, what you want to do is you want to go back to that problem, okay? And that's the part that probably most recruiters will get wrong at this point, is because they'll try that hard to sell them way out, which will work sometimes, but it's not as effective as getting the person focus on themselves instead of what you can do for them.
Give me an example then. What does that sound like?
Of course. So if somebody's telling you, well, look, we've got an internal department team. So what I would say is, like, okay, and you're always slow because your brain is going to go, oh, fuck. I'll be, okay, do you mind if I ask a question about your internal department? This curious stone. And they'll be like, yeah, sure, go on. So does that mean they take care of this problem entirely? You never outsource to agency.
Mm.
Because then at this point, I'm bringing up the problem again, and I'm also most likely getting them to answer their own objection. Because if they say, well, yes, they take care of the problem entirely and we've never outsourced before, what does that tell you?
That they're probably not going to be a good fit right now.
Right now, exactly. So we move to another part, which we'll touch on later, which is how you build that relationship. But right now, you want to prioritize the hot vacancies with the solid problems, right? But more often than not, we'll be like, well, I didn't say that. They'll backside. I was like, well, I didn't say that. It is still a problem. And we have outsourced in the past. That's going to be the 70, 80% answer.
Right.
And then you'll have another 20%, which might be aggressive. Like, look, we haven't fixed the problem, but we won't outsource it. And that's the end of it. And then you move to the one last question. But the logic is you want to go back to the problem.
Mm.
And you want the prospect to deal with the objection, not you to deal with it. Because then they can overcome their own belief about it.
Yeah. And what I also like as well, if you listen to this and you often run into, well, we handle it internally, we have an internal team that handles it. I don't know what you think about this, but if that is like a common objection you're running into daily, every BD session, I think it's, I don't know, I feel like there's also a lot of power when you sort of disarm you make the other person feel like you expected them to say that. So if you say that, you might go, oh, Julia, I'll be honest, like, yeah, I'm not surprised I expected you to say that, or I expected you to say that. Out of interest,
yes.
I expected you to say that. Out of interest, you know, like, you know, we mentioned around you spending a lot of time on going through CVs or whatever. Is that something that they do for you then? So you never end up spending any time going through CVs or a lot of time going through CVs?
Perfect. I would just phrase it negatively. So I'm guessing in the end, they end up taking this entirely away from you.
Right,
you never have to do it yourself, right? Because then they people love to contradict you, right? So they'll be like, well, actually, no, I do end up doing it. And again, they'll get emotional again because they have to, they're going through the problem again. And they're like, okay. And then you're back to the example. Okay, when you say you've got to do it sometimes, what does that mean? That's like once a quarter? Well, no, it's actually almost every vacancy. Right. Okay. So I'm a little bit confused then. You said you take care internally, but for every vacancy, you got to take care of it. And surely I'm getting this wrong. And then you see, like, you're getting again into the emotional conversation.
And what is like the goal here? Is it like, I feel like it's being curious, it's gathering information, it's trying to understand. Do they ever go outside of their internal team? Do they use agencies? If they did, like, what type of roles is it like? Is it all about gathering that information, right? Because if I get off that call, and I now know that they have an internal team, but when they go outside of that internal team for these X, Y, Z reason, I can put that in my database. I can make sure then that, you know, if I do have anyone that I speak to that I think is normally when they go out of like that internal process, and I put someone in front of them and say, hey, you know, when we spoke 3 months ago and you said that you have an internal team, they deal with it, but sometimes they really struggle with these types of hires. I just thought I'd put this person on your radar because I know sometimes, as we said, you go out of your internal team. Like, is that what we're trying to do here? Just be curious, gather information. Like, what is the goal?
Well, it's actually to go deeper and deeper into the problem and ideally get the prospect to realize, to make realizations. Because you'd be surprised how often, and I'm sure this happens with a lot of recruiters, that they'll find someone who's like, oh, well, no, I'm really happy with my supplier list. And then as the conversation progresses, they're like, well, yeah, but they have this problem, they have that problem. And then suddenly they might be thinking like, am I that happy about this? And that's the real difference between the top level salesperson and the, let's say, good and average, is that you get the prospect to think so deeply that they might make a realization they didn't know they needed to make. And that's the top notch. And when you do that, you're also communicating the prospect, imagine what I'm going to do when I'm looking for candidates for you. What candidates are going to say no?
And I feel like this is where we're getting into question strategies then. And I think this is like such an important pillar, which is something I'm always trying to work on. Like, because I feel like you're only getting them to have those realizations, getting them to think deeper if you're good at asking questions and you're good at sitting in that pocket of, like, you know, where normally you might sort of be a bit, I don't know, not scared, but, you know, it's hard to, I think that's what I think is really hard to get good at without being in the pocket, without being in the ring and taking the punches, right? Because that's where you get the reps, and like when they're sort of saying certain things, it's then having the ability to go, oh, that's interesting, like tell me more about that, or like, you know, you mentioned this, like it doesn't sound like that's happening, am I hearing you right here, right? So tell us about, you know, we've put question strategies, let's try and make this applicable for people. What are like frameworks that you equip people with? Like, you know, the ones that I like to use are like repeating back, you know, what people say, or, you know, using the label piece, you know, Chris Voss stuff, it sounds like, or it seems like, is really powerful. So what are those common question strategies that can help people think deeper? Because that's what is going to result in people getting more out of the calls.
Okay, so look, let's try and put this in the framework as much as possible. So you mentioned mirroring and labeling. That's what I would say is more to get the conversation going. It's like a kindle to the fire. At the beginning of the call, very few prospects, even if your pitch hits, are going to be very forthcoming. Mirror and labels. A mirror is when you repeat like 1 to 3 words that the prospect has said back to them, more in a question tone. So like, oh, you mentioned probably not a problem. And then they'll be like, well, and then they'll tend to expand and fill in the blanks. Then the labeling is more when when it, they discover something like, well, yeah, I'm having this issue. Well, it sounds frustrating. And then they'll tend to expand more. So these two are more to get more the fire going, I would say. Then in terms of the questions, like I would say, like I follow the structure that Benjamin Denny, like the We Have a Meeting guys use, which is trying to go level deeper in the problem. So the example, which usually you can find, what do you mean? So what do you mean by that? What makes you say that? Can you give me an example of that? And then going to the deeper levels. Okay, well, what does that mean for your business? And then going to the deeper level, I think once you get to the root cause, that's a crucial part. It's like, well, why do you think this is happening? Mm. That's probably one of the best parts to get at. So why do you think this is the case? And then they'll start to go even deeper. So I think it's really a matter of seeing at what point you are. And then you have the, what I would say, the challenging questions, which are more the questions you use for objections.
Okay. Awesome. Love that. So you mentioned mirroring labeling is more of an opportunity to just have them share more, talk more, which then gives you opportunities to then ask more of these types of things. So what are the frameworks there then to like get people to think deeper? Like, is there certain framings or questions, or just help me understand a bit more about that? Like, how do I get a prospect to think a bit more deep? Because that seems really crucial.
Of course. The first thing is, and again, I've learned this the hard way, is to look for weak language.
Mm.
So things like probably, I think, I don't think, it could, the last time we checked. So like this type of things that are not like, this is not a problem, or I never thought about this, or I never seen this, etc. So then trying to mirror back and get this questioning around the weakness of the language usually will get people more emotional. And sometimes I've had a guy that kept saying probably, and I was like, look, you said probably three times. And he said probably again, and then he's like, oh Christ. I was like, well, look, you know, I think I'm just a bit nervous. I don't mean it, but he was really thinking about it. So the weakness in the language and the terminology they use. And you can only do this if you're really paying close attention to what they're saying. So always hunt for that potential weakness in what they're saying.
What else might that sound like when you say weakness in language, when they're saying, like, what else might that sound like?
It's literally like thinking like think, believe, probably, maybe, like, perhaps. Like anything that's not a definite, usually will give you the chance to say, well, look, do you mind if I ask something? Like, you mentioned probably. Why? And by the way, why is a very powerful question. It gets people very emotional very quickly. So don't use it sparingly, because you'll get people a bit too emotional at times. But like, why did you use the word probably? And then typically they'll come up with the example themselves. Well, because last quarter we had this. Okay, and then again, you can go back and say, what does that mean? And you run them deeper and deeper down the funnel. One important thing is, if you're going to ask a question like, look, you keep saying probably, etc., before you want to soften it. So it'll be something like, look, do you mind if I ask a bit of a personal question? You keep saying probably, maybe, you think, why? And then at that point, it's more likely you're going to get a real answer out of it.
And again, I feel like for those listening, this might be so far off what their calls might sound like. How do we get better at this? The only thing I can think of is being willing to look back at your calls, understand where maybe you could have asked a further question. So being willing to look in the mirror and like coach yourself or be coached. So listening back to your game tape, maybe I might have on my script some of these list of the weak languages to look out for or questions that I can ask. But besides that, I feel like I'm having to be in the ring, in the pocket and doing the reps.
Of course, absolutely. I mean, I would say I have a habit every time I call. You'll know when I call you, when you're flanked a call, you know it. I mean, if you're not an idiot, you know it. And I typically will stop for a second and I will role play it back. So, you know, like they will have said something like what was it recent? Someone said recently to me, is like, I would have to drop dead. You know, like, what would it take for you to consider this? Like, I would have to drop dead. And, you know, when I role played it back, I was thinking like, right, okay, and when you die, who should I be talking to? You know, like, you know, with this tonality, and that would have probably got him laughing.
Yeah.
And then it would have given me the chance to do something else, right? I recently did a crazy one. Someone said, I'm not interested. And I was like, well, what if I do an Italian accent? And the guy just burst out laughing. And he's like, you know what? gone. That, you know, like these little things to play around with to just get better. That's a crucial part.
And then where do we sort of, when's like the right time to close and have the ask of like the meeting then? And how do we frame that then? Mm-hmm. As we get towards rounding this out, like how do we close this out?
So look, I think it's without the example, you don't even think about it. That's my general idea because it's just too early. So you want to list the example. So the example tells you the problem is real. Then you ideally want to test the willingness to fix it, right? And in order to do this, you want to know what the impact is or what the root cause is. Because if, for example, like sometimes I called a guy today and he was banging on about people not picking up the phone, and then he kept talking about how it's just the way things are, you know? And then I kind of asked, like, look, do you mind if I ask a weird question, which is probably the one you guys heard before, is like, have you accepted this is the way things are? And he was like, well, yeah. And I actually disqualified him. Because if he doesn't want to fix that problem, then you should move away from it. And so reversing this back is like you want them to have the problem, be aware of the problem, and have some willingness to fix that. Because when they express any willingness to fix that, so they've tried to do something already or they are doing something, etc., you know that this is a topic that will be keen, they'll be keen to talk about. And this is the part where you can go, well, look, it sounds like something is on your mind. It's on your mind already. Would it be a bad idea to have a sit down and dig a little bit deeper to see if I can fix this problem.
Right.
And that, so it's a minimum level of emotions, a minimum level of interest in fixing the problem, and an example. I would say this is the ideal time to close.
And what else might that sound like then in a recruitment context? Is it that if you get to the point where it's like, okay, so it sounds like you've got these challenges or you're struggling with this, you're spending a lot of time doing this. What have you done so far to try and get more time back or to try and reduce the amount of time that you're spending doing this? Are they then going, well, I'll be honest with you, we have actually used a couple of recruitment agencies, but they haven't delivered or whatever, or mm-hmm. we've actually given the job brief to our internal recruiters again and they're started to work on it again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are those types of things that I'm hoping that I hear? And then is that then when I go, okay, well, is it going to be a bad idea then to do and then go into the closing? Like, is that what these things might sound like? Or
I would say if they bring up something like that, it's becoming a more rational conversation, right? So what I would probably do is hit them again. So if they say something about, I would try recruitment agencies, I would probably think it was like, and I guess then you've written off recruitment agencies as an option for the rest of your company's career, right? And that's again, they'll be like, well, no, I'm not saying that. Because at this point, like they are the one that are proposing they could be keen to look at this, right? Well, I guess then if I told you, I'm not going to be like those guys and leave you hung out to dry. Would it be a bad idea to have a further chat to see that I'm not full of it? So, something like that, you know? I would address whatever new piece of information they give you. So if they just said, oh, we're just re-given the brief, I would be, so I'm guessing at the moment you're 100% comfortable that they'll deliver this time. You know, and you want them to come back to you, because if they don't, then they'll bring this up later anyway.
All right. And then with the people that you've helped them, what are you typically finding that recruiters book in? Is it just like an initial meeting, these types of things? Like, what is it that you're typically finding people book that you work with? Because I'm sure it's not going to be a job briefing call.
This depends wildly, is because like when I work with hardcore contingency agency, some of the time they just agree, they just do the briefing on the phone.
Oh, wow.
They literally will be like, you know what, if you send me a CV that's got these three elements, you know, like I'm happy to discuss terms with you. Like that's would be, but again, it depends how niche you are, how aggressive it is. But let's say most of the time they'll be happy, especially post-COVID, they're happy to just schedule a 30-minute Zoom Teams to discuss this, how it could look like. And it's more, I would say, a discovery call. That's typically what I aim the people are trying to do, because it's very rare it's going to be a briefing right away. And you want to discover before you negotiate terms or before you do anything else. Because you might sometimes find, you know, like they'll give you that job that's been open for 14 months, been given to 10 agencies. They've seen everyone in the market, and the hiring managers wants like blonde blue eyes with 25 years experience with 30 years old, right? Like that type of nonsense. So like, I think discovery calls should always be the aim. If it's even for 30 minutes to, again, dig deeper, Because if you have the problems clear, you can always negotiate better rates as well.
And then what can I do in between the meeting that can increase the chances of that happening? Like, do you often have a bit of a like, hey, look, I was just that annoying person that just gave you a call. I don't know, like, what, you know, what's the sort of typical things that happen in between?
Okay, so look, if you can't, let's say it's one of those cases. So I give a couple of what I call the passport two questions. So there'll be a case where no matter what the case is, they're not hiring, or it's they just signed the contract with a retained agency, whatever, and it's not the right time. So at that case, if you're going to call them back and you qualified them, I always ask a quirky question. So this is probably that anyone that's seen my LinkedIn has seen already, and it's like, do you mind if I ask a weird question before I go? Yeah, go on. What's your favorite pizza topping? Right, and I swear, like, I ask this every time. And then I send them a follow-up email that's the subject of the email. And whenever I call them back, or even I leave a voicemail, hey, you're the pepperoni guy. I'm that weird guy that asked you that, right? And it just works all the time. So you could have variations to this. So it's like, what's your favorite subject in elementary school?
But why'd you do that? To be memorable?
You just never be forgotten. Like, it's never happened I ask that question if someone doesn't remember me next time. And especially in recruitment, you always want to be remembered is better than selling and everything else, right? Because it's already going to be at the top of the mind the next time you call. And you know that most agencies, you're not going to get the client the first call, the second, the third. Sometimes it's going to take 8+ calls before you get the client. I chased clients for 5 years before finally getting some terms signed with them. So like, you want to be consistent. So that would be the first question the last question I ask. The other thing I would say is, if they're giving you nothing, it's the one last question. And typically what I'll do is, okay, if there was one role you have to pick, which is always a nightmare, what role would that be? And typically for 90% of people, a role will come up.
Yeah, it's powerful.
And then you ask for an example. Oh, okay. C++ engineer working from the office. Can you give me an example of the last time you recruited for that? And you're back into the call. Right. So this is the other one that I would do is like, okay, if there was one thing that you would change about your current suppliers for the better, what would that be? Again, they'll be like, well, they do take too long to send CVs. Okay. When you say too long, what do you mean by that? And again, you're back. So these are a couple of like last questions that will get you back in the conversation. We'll get the emotions going. I'll be more memorable. You only ask the pizza question if you've already done the problem qualification. It's just a bad timing type of situation.
No, I love that. And then let's say that we book a meeting, we agree time. What's like your typical non-negotiables in between that meeting? Are you sending like an email? Are you making sure that you get email sent over, or what do you typically advise people to do?
Okay, so look, if I can, obviously, you know, I build the cold calling wiki. So that's my piece of content that I always attach on my follow-up email. Most agencies will have some type of content they can attach. I wouldn't send a presentation, maybe more like a reference or like a case study from another client just to lend some social proof. So send those two things together. Make sure the subject is memorable, so it gets open. And then I typically, depending how far the meeting is, it's either 1 week before. If it's like 2 months away, 1 week before I give them a call. If it's like in a week time, the day before, you won't always get an answer, but I'll leave a voicemail and then a text either the night before or the morning of the meeting, or text or WhatsApp, be like, hey, by the way, this is still happening. And that will massively reduce the ghosting rate. And by the way, you can recover from reschedule. Recovering from ghosting is a lot harder because then the person feels guilty they ghost. So it's much better for them to give them this chance to reschedule if they really need to, rather than being ghosted.
And then do you sort of give them the agenda in the email or anything like that in terms of like what you're going to cover in that meeting that you've just booked or not really?
Yeah, well, I mean, typically I keep it quite vague just because like you don't want to trigger any bias from their side. You can agree this beforehand. Once you book the meeting and it's in the calendar, you can still ask a few questions. That's something I recommend people doing. Personally, by the way, one question I always ask, one thing I say is, I'll be upfront with you. I get paid for my time, and this is true for recruiters as well. So my time is valuable, or is my money. So like, if we book this meeting, what's going to happen that could stop me from attending. So I asked this question before. So I double closed that meeting. And sometimes I can even make him funny. Look, from a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being you're going to pay the invoice without even seeing me, and 10, you're going into witness protection. How likely am I to see you on Tuesday? You know, like there's the all range of things. But there's a reason I call myself the weirdest cold caller. Right?
All right. Okay, cool. Right. So let's round this out then. People, what are like your go-to tools then, or like what are the sort of non-negotiable tools from your standpoint, you know, regardless of like company, just like what tools do you think a modern recruiter seller needs to be as effective as possible?
Okay, look, there's two main things that shockingly, probably I think 90% of prospects I talk to don't really implement. The first one is mobile data. So there's a bunch of founders of like 20 to like 100 people, agencies that are like, oh yeah, my consultants are not calling. And it turns out they don't have mobile data. So you can find mobile data for so many potential options. So like, I would say, like, if you got budget, get Cognizant. It's a solid option for the UK. If you want to go a little bit lower, I use something called Full Enrich, which is like a waterfall enrichment. So you just put a navigator list and it'll just bring it up to you enriched, or something like Lucia. But mobile data, that would be the number one investment. It's typically like maximum 50 cents per number. And if you think about, it'll take you 8 times longer to try and connect with someone for reception. Mm. For me, that's just no-brainer. So mobile data, absolutely non-negotiable. And then the second one would be the click to dial. I'm not even talking about a power dialer, but click to dial. The amount of companies I have that literally have got, some literally have the handsets, and I'm like, oh my God. But some of them have got the click on one number or copy paste. So I would say ideally you want a CRM that's integrated like with a click. So I'm going to make a phone call. So that would be the two things. If you want to have a good cold calling culture in your business, these are the two minimum non-negotiables to have.
Yeah. And I'd probably just from my perspective, add like the call recording. Sometimes that's difficult
to perfect, but I think,
not being able to like review a really good call and listen back to it or listen back to a bad call, I feel like just leaving a lot of growth on the table to get better at it.
I mean, look, now this is not to blow your trumpet, but I think if you also have something that can help people learn, right? Like that type of like material that people can learn from, you'd be surprised. People are keen to learn. This is this, especially recruitment owners, so many think like, oh, you know, like these guys don't want to do anything. Most people want to work. Mm. This is the fundamental thing with human nature. We like to work. Otherwise, we would shy away way more than we do, especially if we enjoy the work. So if you give them the right tools, they're far more likely to want to do that as well.
Love it. Well, look, we got to the end of our coaching session. I hope you all enjoyed that. I know, Julio, you're more than happy to help anyone, or definitely get connected with Julio on LinkedIn. But really appreciate you sharing all of that. And I'm really excited to hear the feedback on this, on how hopefully people can start implementing many of the things that we've covered in today's episode.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that as well.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I hope there were plenty of golden nuggets for you to take away. As you will know, I'm your host here of the Recruitment Mentors podcast, but I'm also the founder of Recruitment Mentors. We're an online subscription-based learning and education platform. We're on a mission to help thousands of recruiters achieve their professional goals and successfully progress their careers through modern and engaging online learning. So if you're a recruitment business owner listening to this, there's a good chance that you value self-development, personal development. You're trying to develop a culture of continuous improvement. But we've partnered with a number of grown recruitment companies who were struggling to understand how they can invest more in their people, how they can upskill them more quickly without spending more time, without having to spend thousands of pounds of external trainers. And we've ended up being a really great fit, modern fit for recruitment teams. We can ultimately help you get more out of your teams by giving your people access to modern and engaging online learning, which they can access on demand. The thing that's really cool about what we're doing at Recruitment Mentors is that all of the people that your teams are able to learn from and the people that are delivering the learning content are people that are in role right now. They're billing, they're actively facing the challenges that your teams are, and a lot of the time they're amongst the top performers within their companies, which means your teams are going to be way more confident to learn and spend time on their learning when they know they're learning from people that are doing it right now, have been there and done it. There's nothing worse than feeling like training is not relevant and not current. The best place to find out more about Recruitment Mentors and if we can help you accelerate your team's performance is send me a message on LinkedIn, connect with me on LinkedIn directly, and I'd love to connect with you and find out if we can help you get more out of your people.